Chapter 2, Arriving in San Francisco and Meeting Maria. Once Steve arrived in San Francisco, he could only hold down small jobs. He felt hard-pressed to accept the fact that for the first time he would now have to earn money on his own. His feelings about working were chaotic at best. He was also busy denying a lurking depression that often interfered with his intention to find a proper job. He thought to himself, what if I were to go to Alaska and work in a cannery, or go to Washington and pick apples with the transient hippies, or go down to the Caribbean and work on a shrimp boat? But he was afraid of the loneliness these jobs might impose. He knew some of them paid fairly well, but he didn't want to leave San Francisco's temperate climate. Although he was spiritually well-developed and practiced good manners, he had been so emotionally mishandled by his parents that he couldn't clearly imagine his fundamental path in life. He was proud that, unlike many who lived in the streets of San Francisco, he stayed away from hard drugs, that he kept his hair clean, and that he struggled hard to live from one day to the next. He had brought along his box guitar, and he made a surprising amount of money begging in the streets, which supplemented nicely his part-time dishwashing job. On the days he wasn't at his job or strumming his guitar for spare change, he bummed money off passing strangers and ate in the soup kitchen. On most nights, he slept in a sleeping bag, saving his money for the occasional hotel room. He had applied for general assistance, but hadn't yet received any checks. He played guitar competently and could play rhythm fairly well, but was hopeless at lead. He managed to teach himself simple leads and wondered half-seriously whether he had suffered some form of brain damage. He didn't understand why he'd done so poorly in school. He couldn't even learn how to type, much less teach his fingers how to play more complicated leads. He hoped to start a band someday. Eventually, Steve bought himself a fancy guitar, which he used to play in cafes in addition to his usual street begging. One day, as he tried to direct attention to his money hat, a pretty flower child stopped about 30 feet away and began playing the flute for money. It was strange to see a flower child in the 90s, but that was how she appeared to him. Steve watched her languidly. She looked like a Spanish Harlem Madonna, one of those everlastingly beautiful women you believe will never age, and you can't imagine them having been made in the sweaty, final throes of passion, because she seemed so immaculate. There was nothing decadent about her. She exuded an aura that was beyond innocence and the unabashed love of life. She was oblivious to the menace of the other impoverished people who lived on those dirty streets. The hippie girl approached Steve and said, "Want to play a duet?" Steve smiled. "You look as pretty as the Mother of Guadalupe," he said. "I don't think I deserve to play a tune with you." "The Mother of Guadalupe is a Mexican story, isn't it?" "That's right. I visited her church once when I was a kid." He paused to look at her, then held out his hand. "I'm Steve. What's your name?" Her laughter was like musical chimes, and her eyes sparkled merrily. "My name is Maria, if you can believe that." A hand drifted to her hair, and she gazed at him from the corners of her eyes. "Well, do you want to play a tune?"
"I can play almost anything."
"Sure," he said, smiling. He paused. "You speak Spanish, don't you?"
"Yes, I'm from Colombia," Maria said. Her mild accent made her sound strong, yet delicate as a girl's doll.
Surprisingly, they shared similar repertoires and played folk music from the 50s and 60s. They sounded so good together, crowds gathered and dispersed regularly as change and dollar bills accumulated in Steve's hat. He had never heard traditional folk songs played with a flute before, and he was enchanted. When they paused for a few moments' rest, he asked her how she had ended up on the street. Her accent made her sound like a young Mother Mary. "My family is very Catholic. When our people want to sell a house, we bury a statue of Saint Joseph upside down by the door. There was very bad blood between the church and government of Colombia. The mafia took over the church and stole its funds. Some people refused to pay the unreasonable tithes to the church charity because they knew it was going to the mafia. The mafia started to bury statues of Saint Joseph upside down in the family's burial plot and sprinkle it with blood. Then they left a note that said, 'So-and-so is sinning against the church, and if the family didn't pay up, they would kill that person.' One day this happened to my family. My father pressed me to leave town, so I did. I don't know what happened to my parents and family. Someday I will go back, but not now. I don't know why they singled us out, because I suspect they were in collusion with the mafia.
Maybe the mafia wanted more money than my family could afford, and they decided to threaten their own kind. She trailed off, painful memories etching lines in her brow. That's one whopper of a story, he murmured, enjoying the suspense as if he had met a real luminary, a conscientious exile. They became close friends and played music together in the streets and in small cafes. It wasn't long after this that Steve had started receiving his government assistance checks and could finally afford to pay for a hotel room. Maria stayed in a shelter. Once the two friends found themselves at Steve's place talking about their relationship, it was late in the afternoon and they had been smoking pot, so they were both a little high. There was little space in the room and both were lying on Steve's bed. Although Steve considered himself pretty hip, he was sexually inexperienced, partly because he was so shy and reserved. But he also suffered functional incompetence, low sex drive, and even though love ran deep in him, he found it difficult to commit. He discussed this with Maria, weighing his words carefully. I think I'm getting stronger feelings for you than I have for other women. Some girls have left me, I think, because they wanted wild sex. They never mentioned it, but one of them ran off with my brother's roommate. He really wasn't any good for her. I'm sure he just wanted to seduce her. He reminded me of that computer game, Donkey Kong, a big monkey. I would have done something about it, but he was aggressive, and I was afraid he'd club me over the head or something. I'm 22 years old, but I've never had sex. I feel that abstinence is good until the relationship is right. If people would do that more, we would have AIDS licked. I'm not a prude, though. Maria said, I believe that there should be abstinence unless a relationship is really solid, too. I have had sex once. I was date raped by somebody who said he was gay. He gave me a bunch of pills called Mandrax and abused me. I've never gotten treated very nice by men. You're the first one who I've really connected with. We just immediately connected. In the creative circle of personal interest, we are totally at one. We like the same music, and in the circle of spiritual unity, we are together too. Steve had never heard such an innocent-sounding voice speak of unity between minds. You're as beautiful as a Nubian goddess, but more controlled, not like an amoeba mating with anything and everything, as if true love was just a send-up. You don't satirize love and sex like some people do and act as if it's something to be abused, save only for infidelity like some fertility rite. Even though we haven't had sex, you relate closely with me. You aren't like some girls who have never shared their personal experiences with anyone, and each partner distrusts the other and there's no sense of mutuality. It's like the world is divided in duplicity, yin and yang. Heaven and earth, spirit and experience. And it's love and sex that kindle the fusing point. We have a good method together, Steve said. I was at the internet cafe in the Hate the other day, began Maria, trying to sound profound, and was thinking about whether I would commit to this relationship. I decided to look at some porn sites just to see how many there are and how bad they are. They are sick. Those people who do those things, I thought about it all day, and I realized that with all those sites, there must be a much larger percentage of people who have morally compromising sex than I have ever thought. I want to have sex, but I want to make sure that we're going to have a real relationship. That's all right, isn't it? I totally agree, said Steve, his voice an excited whisper. Let's write a song that we can play together, contended Maria. A song about true love. About us, said Steve timidly. Yes, smiled Maria. They wrote and played for hours into the night. What they wrote was a love symphony that would remain imperfect and incomplete until their love for each other became full and complete. When I am close to you, we can climb with our feelings to the highest peak. I may feel like an ignorant oddity. Our love may be by the bigot challenged, but I am still happy as I turn the other cheek. I don't have to look for the sparkle in your eyes, or put you under my spell like a shaman who tells lies, or be seductive like an Arabian sheik who, when asked for commitment, busies himself with goodbyes because the truth he does not seek. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. Though your love is like a beacon, only I am aware of the light you shine upon me when I'm cold, afraid, and blind. Very few know not to covet, but I'd rather share under the beams that come from that lighthouse there. I am no longer lost and have no need to wonder or seek, nor must my enemies dare, because we are friends to each other, we are understanding and fair.
In this foreign world where none seems to care, no friends can we find, for what appears before us comes from behind in this strange lair. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. Love is a game of truth or dare, of the mundane mind which seems naked and bare. In an instant you are with me, there is nothing between our souls, the ghost of derision we no longer see. Love is in eternity where it should be, shared by us undivided in an explosive flash that is not obscenity. There is nothing wrong with this spiritual gold. We cannot be white trash because we share affinity. We are not like others, cruel and cold. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. Though we receive very little support and never a large helping, we are satisfied with what the Godhead can to us dole. We are proud of our harmony and declare it to the world because it is something great to purport. It comes from deep within our souls. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. We don't know what makes the world tick, but we know that love it should extol, and there is no reason to feel sick when you have love as your goal. We don't know why the world sleeps and the streets are filled with crime, but we just hope that nothing upsets people like us who count their blessings and don't want ecstasy all the time. We just want appeasement and to a life where chaos doesn't rule or rhyme. We don't understand why simple Simon feels lost and instead of nourishing himself on candor lives on false truths, unable to understand the curved messages of the grapevine. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. Why is our love like a pinnacle of love, self-evident and unmystifying, yet we, on this pinnacle, float in clouds, free of the bonds that make us cynical, but are unable to hold on to our own love, undenying? We are firmly bound to an unfamiliar world where we wonder why we have to be always separate from ourselves, tied to the delusions that our egos are hurled. We know we must, by a matter of ritual, try to untie ourselves from the ideas that make our passion appear as if it is not undying. We must not be like tourists who need guiding. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. What is the true definition of trying? We are unable to dispel the derision that keeps us defying the earthly fetters to which our souls are tied, but still we don't like others keep on lying. Ignorant we remain of the earthly bonds we commonly share. Is life just an illusion, or is life truly unfair? Why must unity appear without a coronet, and opinions about it seem something of a dare? Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. We can be enlightened in the fog, enlightened in our dreams, and cover ourselves at night while others scheme. The team outside will fight, but we inside, even in our despair, will find some insight. And as people stare, our unified spirits shall be redeemed, our burdens will be light. As rumors arise how we came into this world, Judah's character and spirit cannot gossip about us and say our love is wicked. Why do the envious look so green? When we are denuded of truth and part bare because our clothes are split at the seams, we shall realize the dreams that we had in our teens. I'll never want another girl. I'll always keep my love for you like a flag unfurled, even when I have to fight with my conscience in the unforgiving ocean as it swirls, because I stole a necklace from its whirlpools that was made of pearls. Climb above the ignorance, out of the deep sleep. Climb up to me, my devotee. I will foster your love, your cup of sharing I will keep. By morning they had finished the tune to go with it. A few days later, both Steve and Maria played their new song together in the street.